Texas Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 5, season 13. Happy Hump Podcast, I think we can call it that, can't we? Happy Hump Podcast. Anyway, without further ado, on my right I say hello Jack Bengen. Hello Jack Bengen.
Hello Tony Simpson.
And on my left I say hello Ryan Champion.
Hello Tony and Jack.
Hello, we're all back in the same place for a cheeky quick preview of both Rally Germany and Ulster, which Ryan and I are going to talk about in any other business a little bit later on as well. But Jack Bengen, have you had a good week?
I have, thank you. Yeah, have you?
I think so. Ryan Champion, have you had a good week?
Yes, I think I have, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do rally trivia from Gary Boyd right now, right at the top. You ready?
Go ahead.
For 3 consecutive years, the current Hyundai drivers finished Rally Catalunya in consecutive overall positions. 2014, P1, Nouvelle, P2, Sordo, P3, Mikkelsen. 2015, P3, Mikkelsen, P4, Sordo, P4, Nouvelle. 2016, P2, Sordo, P3, Nouvelle, P3, Mikkelsen. Could the Hyundai trio fill consecutive positions again in 2018 and create an opportunity to use the team tactics in a similar way to what M Sport did in Finland a few weeks back? There you go, boys. It's knowledge again, isn't it?
Should that have been Rally Germany?
No. He's called it that. I think what the point he's trying to make is to build, obviously, after what happened on Finland, the next available round, of course, is Germany, which we're going to talk about, but maybe that's where he's got his info from.
Oh, okay.
Well, there you go. Sorry, Jack, you've just ruined it there, really. We were on a bit of a... Well, I was just about to say, wow, you've just put a spanner in the works.
Sorry.
That's all right.
I didn't mean to.
No, it's okay. No problem at all. Ryan Champion, are you all right?
Yes, very well.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right then. Jack Bengen, we've had lots of entries in for the mug. I think it's quite apt, really, that we're giving away mugs. You now know the answer because obviously you're in the shared group with Ryan Champion. Did you correctly guess what it was before you seen the answer, or were you wrong?
No, I didn't guess what it was.
Okay, there you go. We've had about 35 answers in, and 6 of them are right.
It's not a bad percentage.
No, it's not. Boys, I've got to ask you a question. Right, we record this on Wednesday afternoon. Can you win the shakedown stage, Ryan Champion?
Can you win the shakedown stage? Is that just... there's nothing to win, is there?
Well, that's what I've seen, you see. We're at the point now where Tanak's gone fastest on shakedown with Yari Matti and Sebastian Ogier behind them. And I've just seen a couple of things on social media saying he won the shakedown stage. And I went,
yeah, it's modern terminology, isn't it? No, you can be fastest on shakedown, I think, but yeah. That's only me.
Jack Bengen?
I think there's different ways to look at it. But I don't think we should go too much into shakedown stage right now. You can save tyres for the event on the shakedown. So if you finish 5th on the shakedown and save tyres better than the 4 people in front of you, and then you win the rally, then you've won on the shakedown stage, haven't you? But you've not technically won anything.
I see where you're going with it, but I'm still not having you can win the shakedown stage.
No, I don't think you can really.
No, okay, that's fine. Jack Bengen, can we go hot-footed into your paper this week for a story just before we get to Rally Germany with regards to driver's slate average speeds, debate as FIA investigates.
Yeah, there's going to be a meeting at Rally Germany this week to discuss average speeds on rallies. Again, to be honest, I don't really know why it's a debate, because average speed is some sort of definition of safety is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. But they're going to talk about the limit of speed on stages. We've talked about a lot about already. We had Oit Tanak doing a 78 miles an hour stage speed last year in Sweden, and obviously Finland changed its route quite significantly to bring its average speed down. Some of the drivers really enjoyed the Finland route. Some of them thought it could have been a little bit better if they hadn't have had to sort of stick to that average speed limit. So they're going to talk this week, and Yves Masson's hopeful that they can come to some sort of conclusion with the teams. Inserting chicanes and things like that is not popular with the drivers, as you'll read Sebastian Ogier's quote in this week's MN.
What is his quote? Go on, give us a quote.
How can I put this? He says the chicane is bull.
That's bullshit. That's
something
right. You
else.
Can say that. You know, you can find that. It's fine. We're all right. Okay. We have a little warning. That's fine. It's fine. We can say that. We can say that. Ryan Champion, we've all experienced chicanes, even at our lowly levels. They are complete bullshit, aren't they?
They are. And an average speed is no way to tell the safety of a stage. I'm sorry. And I know it's always been used. It's been used
for years. Why are we still having this conversation? Why are we still talking about this? It really infuriates me. It really does.
Yeah. No, but they still haven't found a better solution yet, have they? That's the problem.
It doesn't tell you if a corner, if there's a really fast corner with a huge drop on the outside that's more dangerous than any other. The average speed's irrelevant. Absolutely irrelevant.
I couldn't agree more.
I explained it in my office to the guys this week as if you had a stage where the road is 2 miles wide and it's a 3 mile runway and you reach 160 miles an hour on that runway and your average speed is, I don't know, 140 miles an hour, but it's like an open runway, or you do a rally stage, which the average speed is 60 miles an hour, but the road's 10 feet wide with trees lined all around the outside of it. Which one's the safer route? So obviously the airfield, isn't it? Because you're not going to crash into anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You've never seen me on an airfield, have you? You've never seen me on an airfield. It seems that everybody else seems to be getting excited now, just before we come to Germany, that drivers are, you know, silly season could almost be upon us, Jack Benyon. You guys have already started talking about what drivers are out of contract and everything else now.
Yeah, well, David Evans has been... writing away, very, very interesting Toyota story, which is quite small in MN, but if you look at the quotes, I think they're very interesting. There's a story on Toyota and Oit Tanak. Oit Tanak and Andreas Mikkelsen, the only two drivers with contracts for next year, by the way. That's covered off in the stories this week, but so I'm just looking for the quote now. Tommy Mäkinen says, This is from Finland. So he says, the Japanese are here in Finland. We will talk for the future. We make the decision together. They have their opinion. I would like to do something in the driver market, but let's see. Now, that sounds to me like Tommy Mäkinen wants to get someone else in. And then, very telling, the next quote is, the Japanese would very much like for Jari Matti to continue, which definitely makes it sound like it's a Japanese decision to keep Jari Matti and that Tommy would actually like to investigate the driver market if you're a bit of a stifler for, conspiracy stories. But that's an interesting one. And then the other story is, obviously, Thierry Neuville apparently nailed on to stay with Hyundai next year, and then there's a little bit of an explanation below about Mikkelsen's future as well.
Yeah, right. We're not surprised by that, are we?
No, only that... So, Jack, did you just say Mikkelsen is under contract for next year?
Yeah, Mikkelsen and Tanak, yeah.
Which I have to say, I probably hadn't realised, so that obviously...
It doesn't actually specify... David did actually push Alan Panas, the team manager, very hard as to whether that would be a full season under contract for Mikkelsen, and he basically refused to answer. So that's quite telling as well.
I suppose just because he's under contract doesn't mean to say he's going to drive. We've seen that before.
Exactly.
You see the Mäkinen one's quite interesting, isn't it? Because obviously Jari Matti, part of the Timo Jokke stable, as was Tommy Mäkinen. I guess we'll just have to see how that one plays out, won't we?
If Japan wants to keep Jari Matti Latvala, then I suggest very strongly that Jari Matti Latvala will be in that car next year.
I'd say so.
Yeah, but again, like you've just said, well, he might be under contract, but maybe he doesn't do all the rounds or whatever. I don't know. Could be another Hyundai, but maybe they'll learn from Hyundai's 2018 season of swapping drivers around. I guess we'll see. We'll come to Rally Germany. We've got John Armstrong at the end of the podcast just talking about Germany. Boys, I'm going to put it firmly on your toes. We're not going to debate it anymore. Winner for Rally Germany, Jack Benyon.
A winner for Rally Germany?
Yes. Let's not muck about, straight in. Come on.
Neuville.
Ryan Champion?
I'm going for a comeback for M Sport and Sebastian Ogier.
I'm going to go Tanak. There you go.
Well, no, we've got all the big guns covered there, haven't we?
Yeah, so, we've covered all
so
our
clearly,
bases.
Clearly, Danny Sordo's going to come and do well.
Absolutely.
One Sordo performance and take victory.
Yeah. Right, a couple of things I want to mention. It's Ulster this coming weekend. A bit of a story that came out a couple of days ago, boys. I think it's quite sad, really, with regards to, we've got John Armstrong, of course, who's at the end of the podcast, who hasn't got budget to go real rally in an inverted commas. He's competing this eSports championship, a very talented young man indeed. But Keith Cronin, of course, multiple British champion, started the season with a Hyundai run by Phil Case and there's been money put in from various sources. But basically, entry pull for Ulster, I assume that's the end of the season, and that effectively it just kind of draws quite sadly, I suppose, the end up the way the championship's going to kind of pan out, Jack. I don't know.
Yeah, it is sad. I think there's a couple of things to consider. I think if, you know, obviously it's a big deal that Keith's not doing the rounds, he's a full-time champion and going for his fifth championship. It's not unusual to see people dropping out the second half of the season, but I think obviously we're most noticing Keith because he's, well, brilliant, and also because there's not many R5 entries, so it's just another ticked off the box, isn't it? Sam Moffat, the Irish Tarmac Championship leader, is also not doing the event as well, so that's two big names lost from the entry list. But how do I say this? I'm going to say it's going to be a very interesting couple of weeks for Keith, and I would not be surprised if this isn't the end of his season. I think you could well see him in some international events before the end of the year, for sure.
Right, okay. Watch the space, WRC2, here we come. All being well.
I think saving cash. He's not going to win the BRC after the Ypres puncture. He's too far off, and Edwards has got two maximum scores.
Yeah.
It would be very difficult for him to turn that round, especially with GB being a double points round, and Keith not being as strong on gravel the last couple of seasons. So I think they may have readjusted their budget and will be looking to do other things.
Okay. There you go. Ryan Champion, can we have your any other business for this week, please?
Well, my any other business sort of relates to the Ulster Rally, and I was sort of thinking back to my first real experience of the Ulster Rally, of certainly going over the stages. I went across back in 1994 to do gravel notes for one David Higgins.
Wow.
David was doing the rally in the Peugeot 106 Rally at the time, co-driven by the late Beef Park, by Michael Park. I remember us having a disastrous game of golf the day before the rally, because none of us were very good, I seem to remember. And then doing gravel notes on the Ulster Rally, which was always epic at that time, because the second day particularly, we started ridiculously early out of Belfast, particularly if you were doing gravel notes, which meant you were starting at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And it always seemed to rain as it was getting light, with the famous shiny tarmac on the Ulster Rally. And I went on to do the Ulster, I think, about seven times, and a fantastic rally. Certainly a lot easier if it's dry, which is a very rare occurrence. But just looking back at that year in 1994, it was won by one Malcolm Wilson, with his teammate Stephen Finlay second, in another Michelin pilot car, with Kenny McKinstry third in the famous Legacy that he drove at the time. Fourth place, winning Formula 2, was, have a guess.
Was it Harry Rovanpera?
No, but right country, Jack Bennion.
I know.
His name's gone.
If his name's gone, you've probably not got the right person.
Okay, I've got the wrong person then.
Tommy Mackinnon.
It was Tommy Mackinnon.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah. That's not who I was thinking of.
You were thinking of Mackinnon. That's who you were trying to think
no,
of,
no.
Jack.
Oh, no,
okay.
No.
All right, I'll take it back then. You wasn't. Go on, right, sorry.
So I was just going to say, it was interesting, wasn't it? We've got one current WRC team boss won the rally, and one current WRC team boss was fourth and the winner in Formula 2. So we've always known that the British Championship's a feeder to the World Championship, but just underlines that it's always been the case.
I've got a story which we haven't got time to do now, but I've done Ulster. The first time I did Ulster was 2002, and we got into a situation where we were off rally route, and I ended up getting an unofficial police escort. What we didn't realise it was the police, because they were unmarked cars, and they were about to do a hard stop, as they call it, on us, because they thought we weren't really in the rally because we were that far off route. There you go. True story. When I got more time, I'll tell you the full story. But it was an interesting one. And we got to a stage, I can't remember what stage it was, but everybody, and it's when it was Milner and all, that's when the World Cars were doing it, and they were all waiting for us to go through the stage. They actually stopped the stage, they stopped the rally, and to get us back into it. But it all got very, very interesting. Anyway, there you go. My only other business for this week is get well soon, Craig Parry. Obviously, friend of the show, Gus Greensmith, who was on the other week, horrendous off, doing some testing for Rally Germany. Craig's still in hospital. Get well soon, Ian. I hope you're all right, mate. And Gus is doing the rally this weekend. Stuart Loudon deputises for Craig. So apparently things are, I think he was in WRC2, I think he was 6th or 7th fastest today. So Gus obviously back in the saddle, and keep a shiny side up this time, Gus, and stay safe. So there you go, boys. It's a very brief early part of the podcast for this week. We've got a big section with Chris Atkinson coming up, talking about his career, and obviously we've got John Armstrong talking about Germany and the Esports World Championship, and the concept of if he wins it, he comes back to be a guest host for a whole podcast. That's what I've dangled the carrot, Jack, to get him. To get him to win the championship.
I think so. I think you should get him on for a full show anyway, just for a laugh.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Ryan got really jealous because we did probably have 20 minutes of just me and John reminiscing of when we did a season together. So, yeah, Ryan started piping up and got a bit jealous.
A bromance.
Yeah. It was just good times, me and John, back in the day. Just good times. So, there you go. But Ryan obviously has been a bit close to him recently.
It's not really. Not like that.
Started to show signs
just,
that
we just happen to be working on a project which all will become clear in a few weeks.
There you go. It's exciting, isn't it? We know what it is. We can't talk about it. All right, fine. Right, we've all got to go and do our different things. Jack Benyon, sorry, it's short but sweet with you this week, but we will miss you. You will be back next week to see whether we got our prediction right, where it turns out, like, I don't know, you are cankering and will end up winning Germany or something like that, you know, due to our predictions. But we will find out our predictions. So you'll be back with us next week, as ever.
Yep.
Good. Short answer for a long question. Ryan Champion, you're of course at the back of the podcast with me as well. But you're not flying off anywhere still, are you?
I am flying off towards the end of next week, but not before doing Absolute Rally, of course.
Ah, exciting stuff. Okay, folks, sit back, relax. It was a great, very relaxed chat. I apologise in advance. I wasn't feeling very well when I did this with Chris Atkinson, and he was very, very understanding. And we just went through his career and we talked about a couple of different things that, and we will get him back again, because to be fair, we kind of ran out of time. We ended up doing like 40 minutes with him, but he was very good and very patient with me because I wasn't quite on form, to say the least. So I hope you enjoy it. And if you have not got your answers in yet, by the way, for the rally car, please get them in now to studio@absoluterally.co.uk. And we will be making the draw probably next week when the guys from Kiel the letters. All right. Sit back, relax, enjoy the rest of the podcast.
This is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsports. Developed from hands-on knowledge that you only get in the service park, not the boardroom. Kielder create products for their own use and like-minded people. Those inspired by mechanical motion and engineering. Plus, exclusively for Absolute Rally listeners, use discount code RALLY for 10% off at www.kielder.co. Simply search Kielder Tools online.
And welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. And as ever, we always try to do things a little bit different. Have you guessed, by the way, the noise of the rally car yet? Have you figured out what it is yet on the Kielder advert? Get your answers in. Anyway, without further ado, it's a guest I've been trying to get on for a while, and just kind of time differences and things like that. But we finally got our man, Chris Atkinson. Welcome to Absolute Rally.
Thanks for having me.
No, it's great. I've desperately, because we've had David on, we've had Travis on. We haven't quite had Patrick yet. We're working on Patrick as well. So we're kind of working our way through the Subaru USA guys. Now, before we go any further, Chris, what's it like having Jacques Villeneuve and Patrick Sandell as your teammates on an event?
It was actually really good. I obviously didn't know what to expect. I'd never really met Jacques before. Obviously, we knew his experience in terms of racing in Formula cars and Indy cars and all those things, and he was awesome to work with. I really enjoyed having him in the team, and Patrick and I get along well anyway, so to be honest, it worked out really well on the weekend, and there was no dramas, and we all sort of worked together to try and make the most of the weekend, which wasn't too bad.
Rallycross seems to be the kind of the go-to place, doesn't it, these days? You know, we obviously look what's going on with World Rallycross. Obviously, you guys now are involved with that, albeit with the spin-off of the American series. But, you know, your old mate Petter's there, obviously. Seb Loeb's there, yourself, Patrick. You know, it seems to be the kind of the go-to place.
I think it, even though it's a more, you'd almost say it's more of a circuit formula than a rally formula, but the style of driving that the cars suit is a rally style. So I think it's easier for us almost to hop in and adapt to the cars than, say, a circuit guy. The gravel bit, the way the cars handle, they're so similar to basically a WRC car, just with more power. So you just need a bit more finesse with it. But basically, it's when I first hopped in the car, of course, the engine was awesome and that, but I just drove it like I knew how to drive a WRC car, and the speed was there straight away. So that was sort of easy for the us rally guys. And I think also in developing the cars, that sort of helps as well.
Do you think, the Vermont team have got such heritage and such history now, especially obviously building rally cars. They've kind of brought that over now into rallycross, and they've kind of gone out and got the best guys they can get. You know, the likes of yourself and, as I say, Patrick, obviously Travis, David. They've kind of gone out and kind of cherry picked the best guys they can get as well for the car.
Yeah, I think from a driving point of view, they like having that flexibility that a rally driver can bring. That, you know, they can put me and Patrick in a rally car, no worries. They don't have to worry about us destroying cars and go out there and have fun in a rally if we need to fill in. And same vice versa with Travis and David. There's no problem with those guys hopping into a rallycross car. So it works well for the flexibility and sort of where the team sits at, as a motorsports team. It is still a rally team, and yes, it's gone into rallycross, but Subaru is a rally brand. That's where it's at. So I think that's why they've gone with such a rally focus lineup. And also on the engineering side as well, we've got some great engineers that are come out of WRC working in the team. Even though it's a small team, the quality of engineers and team we have, it's a lot of guys I've worked with in WRC teams in the past, and I think it all fits really nicely.
Did you get a little bit excited when you seen Toyota boss Mr. Toyota coming out asking for Mitsubishi and Subaru to come back? You know, obviously with the did you get a little bit giddy like all of us, Chris?
I'm a bit of a realist, as much as it's nice to be optimistic. It's a shame that those two manufacturers aren't in rally, and I think they're such a big part of the brand. The history of both Mitsubishi and Subaru and the WRC and what their brand was built on. It was built on that reputation of rally, and I think it took a while, especially when Subaru pulled out of the World Championship. You sort of had this afterglow effect where, 5 years after, people were asking me still about Subaru and rally. Like it was always there, even though they weren't racing. And I think now, finally, it had dropped away, and luckily Subaru America and even Subaru Australia a little bit continued some motorsport, and they're two of the strongest markets in the world for Subaru now. So it's an interesting lesson that not to underestimate motorsport, even though it's hard to quantify sometimes. It's there's definite value, and when you go to these Subaru events in America now, they're amazing. There'll be 10 or 15,000 people, and you'll see people in old Subaru rally team like the old WRC shirts and things like that. Like there was a big passion for the brand in motorsport, and it's a shame they're not there, but that's life.
That blue and yellow is still, I'm still convinced that even my son, albeit at 9 months old, would still recognise that blue and yellow as kind of the Subaru blue and yellow. I think it's almost in DNA now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And we've gone away a little bit in the USA from it, but we've still got some blue on my car, and maybe in the future we'll be back in those colours. I think it's so iconic, and it's like your Ferrari red or your Ducati red or whatever. You know, it's the colour that's just synonymous with Subaru and rally. And whenever I put up on Instagram, I'll post the WRC car. They're the ones that still get the most likes.
Chris, if I can take you all the way back to the Suzuki Ignis, though.
Yeah.
Can you remember that far back?
Yeah, of course. That was pretty much what got me started, got the ball rolling. And I think I was, when you look back at it, and of course there's been disappointments in my career, but, you know, it's also a lot of fortunate stuff happened, timing, right place, right time. I'd only been rallying a year and a half, I think, not even, when I got asked to come and test for them. So from my first rally to getting an opportunity to go test for them from what I did in the Asia Pacific Championship in our old private car. And I got invited up to Japan to test with Monster Tajima and another driver, a young driver from New Zealand. And we went to the North Island of Japan. You know, I was 21 or 22 years old. And I remember it quite clearly that it was like basically a shootout. Of course, they wanted to see how we worked in with the team and things like that. But it basically came down to a little gymkhana in a car park in one of the Super 1600 cars. And I beat the other guy and then had a job offered to me to go race Asia Pacific with Suzuki. Obviously made the most of that. And I learned so much in that car in terms of how to really push the limit, because a Group N car you can overdrive quite easily, where Super 1600 car you have to wring its neck. And I think that set me up well for hopping into a WRC car, because when I hopped back in the Group N car, you had to calm yourself down, come back a notch, where the first time I really felt like I was pushing the limit of a rally car and overcommitting the corners and getting away was in that Suzuki.
There was such great little thing, and to be fair, you've kind of told the story, because I was looking at the history and I was thinking there wasn't a lot that happened before you actually got that drive. And where was the realization for you that this actually could be a career? How quickly did that kind of strike you that, God, this could actually be the rest of my life?
I think somewhere probably in that second year with Suzuki, and we were also driving a Group N car with support from Subaru in Australia. I think that year, because when I went to the Asia Pacific, obviously there wasn't a lot of competition, but I did get to bench myself. I think that first year they brought Daniel Carlson out to go up against me in the Super 1600, and he was, I think, junior world champion and had links to Peugeot WRC team back then. I can't remember exactly, but I was beating all the Group N cars on the gravel on a front-wheel drive car, like even the Group N world champions and Carlson as well. And I think it was quite fortunate there was a representative from the Subaru WRC team there observing the race for the following year, entering the world championship. And funnily enough, my dad and a friend of ours ran into him at the airport and just started chatting because they didn't know where they were going, and ended up watching the rally together and ended up having dinner with him one night. That was Paul Howarth, and that sort of started the discussions going into WRC as well. So it was a whole series of events that resulted in that situation. Obviously, you've got to be fast and put it on the line, but then obviously the right people seeing it at the right time as well.
Was it, because of course I was thinking about this before we started doing it, and I was thinking you went in to replace Tommy Mäkinen when Tommy retired. Is that right?
Was it the year after?
It was the year
I replaced Hirvonen.
Ah, of course. So, sorry, I was about to. Yeah. So you replaced Mikko when Mikko moved on to Ford. But again, you know, you've gone from you've gone from the Super 1600 car, obviously you were doing some WRC rounds in a Group N car as well, but you know, there was normally this kind of, especially with the Finns, speaking about someone like Mikko, they're normally kind of, you know, drip fed in, you know, they'll have some private cars and stuff like that where they'll get to grips with a world car. My understanding is that you were pretty much into a full factory world car.
Yes, straight in, and my first test and my first time driving it was an ICE as well, which I'd never driven on. So my first WRC event was Rally Sweden, and that was my first time racing a WRC car. So yes, straight in the deep end, but you're not going to say no, are you? You're gonna have a go, and obviously it was a steep learning curve. I think actually we set the fastest first split in that stage, not that that counts for much, but we were up on everyone on the first stage. Obviously, I was straight into it, having a go, and then we went off a few corners later and lost 30 seconds or something on the stage. But you know, I think when you show glimpses like that early on, even though the result wasn't there, probably in the end, that first year in Sweden, which first time in a WRC car, first time in Sweden, it's always going to be a little bit tough. Then I think just seeing those glimpses of the team, we're quite happy with that.
With regards to the conversation, because again, your brother sat with you for most of the early part of your career. In fact, you sat with your brother first, didn't you?
I did a couple of rallies with him, I think, and a mate of his, just, you know, local club rallies. And then I went to a rally school, and it was just a small thing where Rick Bates, Neil Bates' brother, was running a rally school. And it was basically my first time, apart from mucking around a little bit, my first time driving a rally car on a gravel stage. And I remember Rick asking how long I'd been racing for, and I was going, no, that's the first time I've driven a car on gravel. And my dad sort of knew those guys from when he raced in the early 80s. And Rick said, I think you should probably start doing rally. So that's the way we went.
So your brother swapped seats. How difficult was it when, because the change came, Glenn came to sit with you then in the WR car. Was that an easy conversation to have with your brother?
Yeah, probably not the easiest, but I think looking bad, it wasn't the wrong decision. So to go to the World Championship without someone experienced beside you might have been even harder than it was. So I think that was a good move. And Ben went on to have a really good career as a co-driver for Cody Crocker. They won the Asia Pacific Championship 4 times. He's still a very good co-driver. So I think it was just what's required when you go to the World Championship. And I was a complete novice. And I think if we both went there as complete novices, it might have been too big a step. So that was good to get someone that had WRC car experience and World Championship experience in the car. And I think that first, I think we did Rally Australia in the Group N car, which we won with Glenn straight away. So I've never, with Top Crow drivers, same when I swapped to Stefan, I've never really had a problem swapping them. And even when Stefan hopped in the car in 2007, I think it was, straight away I was able to drive on the notes. And even I did a rally with Stefan this year in America, and you know, we hadn't rallied together probably 2 years, and straight away bang on the notes and off you go. With those sort of level of guys, it's no problem at all.
You were in the iconic brand, you were in, you know, the team with Petter, and you were really starting to chip away. And I was looking back through kind of results when the pullout happened, you just had your best ever year.
Yeah, basically we ran third most of that year. Just at the end of the year, we had a couple of bad results. I think a couple of mechanicals and an accident. And otherwise, we should have been third in the World Championship that year. So, which would have been behind Loeb and Gronholm, I guess. So yeah, we were sort of at coming into the peak of career. You know, I guess I was 27 years old and had good experience and sort of found a good rhythm. At the end of the year before, I actually feel like we were faster in 2007. I think the package was a better package at the end of 2007 and start of 2008 compared to the car that we had at the end of 2008. I had a lot of fourths in 2007, and obviously it was just hard to crack the podium with the strong opposition those years. And then, yeah, 2008 was a pretty good year for us overall, and I was obviously a bit of a shock. And the big thing was that there weren't many opportunities, or there were basically none at the end of that year, unless you do what Petter did and start your own team. So yeah, it was an unfortunate timing. It was so late in the year as well that really sort of put a stop on things.
If I can just take you back just briefly, the S14 you just mentioned that came about towards, which of course the hatchback version, which they kind of moved on to in 2008. How much more difficult was that to drive than the old S12?
I don't think it was a lot more difficult to drive. It wasn't the evolution that we needed at that time. And it's unfortunate because I think a lot of the things that we were working on for 2009 I think the car that Marcus drove, there were some big steps. Like, we were still trying to develop the car at the end of 2008, and there was a lot of things in the pipeline going to 2009, which would have made some big improvements, suspension travel, things like that, that we were lacking, were coming along. And, we never got to really convert that car. That car probably needed more time before it came out. And I think it was a bit of a rush and a hope that things would turn around with that car. But I probably the most enjoyable car to drive with the S12B. That was a good package. And, yes, we band-aided a few things to make it work that weren't ideal in terms of setup, but we got it to a position where you could drive it at pretty much at the limit all the time, and you knew what it was going to do, which was a good feeling. And then we know we didn't quite have the quickest package, but you could get a good result out of it.
Still a really popular car today as well. You know, in private hands, you still see loads of 12Bs about, and I don't know whether it comes down to the fact that they're easier to drive these days for the slightly older gentleman than a new R5 car, perhaps, but they're still a really, really popular car. But that said, I feel really old saying this, Chris, I know, but people are now starting to go the other way as well. They're now starting to stop using them in competition and restore them back to what they were and just putting them out on kind of track days and things like that, which makes me a little bit sad, really.
Yeah, it was always going to turn that corner one day. They are a classic car. All those from the early or late 90s to the mid-2000s, that era of car, I think, will become a bit of a classic in the future.
Now, 2009 was a quiet year by your own admission. You did do a deal to go out in the C4 on a very, very wet island, I seem to remember. And I seem to remember possibly a telegraph pole that you fell out with as well.
Yeah, we had reasonably good pace there. It was probably a bit of a risk to swap cars and go straight into Ireland and a tough event. I can't remember whether we finished fifth or sixth in the rally. So considering the incidents we had, and that's going to happen when you're taking risks in a new car and slippy Irish shiny tar.
It's very unique, that place, to say the least.
Yeah, I know, but I'd always had good pace there and good results there, so that's what we thought. Well, okay, let's have a go and see if we can open up some doors. It unfortunately didn't get the desired result, so it was a quiet year. Like, there was no seats, unless you go and throw millions of dollars at buying a seat, then there weren't many options.
That's it. There was only, you know, two work teams, wasn't it? There was only Ford and Citroen at that point, which must have been, you know, I call it kind of almost, we kind of lost two or three generations of drivers almost when that happened.
Yeah, basically it was, if there'd been another team there, I'm sure I would have probably walked into a seat. That I'd even had discussions that previous year. But I was still under contract with Subaru to go to another team. So, timing-wise, definitely wasn't ideal, but worse things that happened to other people in the world. So, you just deal with it and move on.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just before we move away from Citroën, how big a, because, you know, I suppose Pro Drive back then was a bit like how people see M Sport now. There's kind of this 4 degrees, 5 degrees of separation. You know, Pro Drive was the M Sport, I suppose, of the day, where everybody seems to know people who work there and things. It's a very personable place to be. How different was it going into Citroën from having been with Pro Drive?
I know everyone anyway, so I had no problems going to other teams and actually got along with the French guys really well. So yeah, there was no big drama there. Where everyone's professional and, like I said, you know everyone. I've been in the World Championship for 4 years. You get to meet people. You know who's around. So it is pretty easy to swap teams and get on with it. They're all very professional and there's always something to learn as well, so it was a good experience.
So we then come full circle almost back to Yellow and back to APRC.
Did APRC for a few years and ended up winning it for Skoda. When was that? 2012 maybe?
Yeah,
can't remember. So yeah, a couple of years in a Proton. Probably should have won it there, but we had a few mechanical issues, and and then got the opportunity to drive the Skoda, which was an awesome car to drive. Really enjoyed that year, and managed to wrap up the APRC, which was nice too. It's good, obviously, to get a championship. You'd hope to be able to do that in my position. It'd be pretty disappointing if I didn't. So it was nice to tick that box.
12 was a busy old year as well, because you turned up in ironically another Pro Drive car, albeit not run by Pro Drive now, but you turned up in a Mini as well.
Yeah, no, got to do some events in the Mini, which had some opportunity in the future if that continued, which would have been interesting situation as well. So although we were, it was basically a sort of private team, slightly supported by both Pro Drive and Mini. We had some okay results there, but yeah, it's hard when you've been out of the WRC for, what was that, like 3 or 4 or 5 years. I think you definitely need, unless you want to go and throw the car away occasionally, you need some more time and to get back on the notes like you were. If you want to take some risks, and I think you even see it with Loeb as well, and that, yeah, you can go there, but it's unlikely it'll last for a whole rally. So I think we had some good results there, and really it was a private car. So when you're up against the factory teams, it's always going to be a bit of a challenge. But had some fun and got to do some more WRC events, so you're never going to complain with that.
That's good. To be fair, Chris, I've just looked at, I just kind of tapped in the results there. I think you do yourself a bit of a disservice there. There's a few fifths, a sixth. You think about that in today's kind of world. You want to win, but by the same token, to come back in after a couple of years out, still a fair old effort.
Yeah, no, I think I could. I know that sort of pace where you're finishing, you know, fifth or sixth, like that's not the issue. You can turn up and you can do that. And I've sort of shown that when I've hopped in cars for one-off mostly, unless there's some other issues, that you can run that top six, top five pace. But then at that top three pace, that's that last little bit where they know the stages so well. They've studied them year after year and refined their pace notes, and you have that one little lift, and there's it gone. That's your 2/10, 3/10 a kilometre done. Just one little lift. So that's the difference between that top sort of six pace and then sort of top three pace.
Now, you're another man that, again, there's still strong Pro Drive links, because fast forward on for the next couple of years, you're in the Pro Drive Golf, which we don't know a lot about because obviously the way the media works and stuff over in China, but you were driving the Pro Drive Golf as well.
Yeah, well, I was actually with the team. They approached me, the team, in China, and I went to help them out on they were running a front-wheel drive car, and I was like, I'll go have a look. You never know, China's a big country and lots of opportunity, and they were talking the right things, but you never know where it's going to lead. They were talking about stepping up and building a proper four-wheel drive car and that. And so I went over there and did a couple of rallies with them. And they got cracking on with it, and all of a sudden they've gone to visit a couple of WRC teams, and I go, I didn't believe it would happen. Then all of a sudden they're building, I think they ended up building four or five. But basically it was a lot of the design, which is why it worked out well for the Chinese team. A lot of the design was based off what ProDrive already had in terms of a WRC car. But the package, the Volkswagen engine that they put together, it was a really good package that they did as a, you know, it's not a top WRC car in terms of the current cars, but a very, very close one, and able to run at a good national championship level. And that was a good fun car to drive. We had some, I can't remember whether we won 15 of the first 16 races or something ridiculous. And we were up against other WRC cars as well, but it was just enjoyable to drive, easy to drive. I knew I had pace up my sleeve, and had some fun racing out there. It was really cool. And it was like Richard Thompson, who I'd worked with in Pro Drive as a WRC engineer, and a lot of the crew that I knew. So it was a good fun few years, and it was really, I'd be still racing for them now, I'd say,
if the rallycross option didn't come in front of me.
The other thing was, of course, as well, there was a lot of other drivers out there. I'm just thinking now McShay was out there, Mark Higgins seems to be flying out there. I think Dave, I don't know whether David did some events.
Stoll.
Yeah, Manfred Stoll went over there
was
as
doing
well.
Some. Yeah. So yeah, it was a good level and it's slowed down a bit the last couple of years, but I think just the cost of running those cars, the Subaru team, which I did a couple of rallies for last year, they had a car from Vermont Sports Cars, which is basically a similar spec to the Volkswagen that I was racing in China, with basically a WRC engine and running gear and stuff. So the level was quite high and it was good to be doing that in interesting places, like racing in the out of Mongolian desert and some good tarmac rallies and some unique places. It was pretty cool.
How did Hyundai come about, Chris?
I'm trying to remember. I had had some discussion and we made some contact with Alan Panas, and they asked me to come and help test out the car and give them some feedback. So that's sort of where that evolved from.
With regards, because you were then taking on, of course, there was you Hannanen and Brian Bouffier, wasn't it? It was kind of the lead test drivers for it.
Yeah, we were doing a lot of the testing. And then, to be honest, I didn't do an awful lot of it. I was still based in Australia, so it was not ideal for them to have me come over there. It was obviously interesting to try and develop that car and learn a lot. I only got a little bit of a go in the rally. We did Mexico and had some problems on the first stage and had a few issues, and then Rally Australia was a sort of a token gesture there in a third car. So, I didn't really – I was hoping to get more rallies out of that, which never came. Yuha got a lot of rallies that year and had a shot at that but didn't make anything of it. But it was still cool to be a part of that program, and you see where it is today. They've turned that into a really good team and car and package and a fair chance to win the World Championship this year.
Do you allow yourself a bit of an envious glance at the way the WRC is now to where it was when you were unfortunately having to kind of leave a full-time seat?
I don't really think about it too much. I know the hard work that those guys at the top are putting in, and I know without the right opportunity, it's always going to be hard to get in there and do that. But yeah, no, I watch it, and it's still an awesome spectacle and the best motorsport in the world. So a shame that I never got to, I guess, have a proper shot at a world title, but still got to do some amazing stuff in rallying and have amazing life. So no complaints on that side.
The 17 cars, do you think the way they are, obviously we've all got really excited since the 17 cars coming, do you still see that as the long-term solution, is getting people into the sport by having these kind of almost Group B monsters again?
I think so. And personally for me, I think where my driving style suited the old style WRC cars, I think it would suit again these style. The ones through the middle period there, I don't think suited my driving style. There was no finesse with it. You were basically just throwing the car at the corner as fast as you could and going full throttle. That's how you had to drive them. Where now they're back to driving them, managing the grip and actual finesse to their driving. So I haven't had the opportunity to drive one of the 17 cars, but I'm sure I feel like from what I see that would suit my style and suit that old style. It used to be that pinnacle, you know, the WRC car was a real pinnacle, and all of a sudden the R5 cars went much slower than the WRC cars. So it's nice to have something cool like that again. It should be the pinnacle of the sport. If you want to be like F1, don't copy F1, unfortunately, like they try to do. You make it like the pinnacle of the sport. It's got to be exciting. It's got to be incredible to watch and mind-blowing, and that's why rallying's so good, and I think that's why these cars, again, you watch the footage, it's unreal. Like that's what gets people's attention on rally. The majority of the people aren't going to go and search out rally. Like rally fans will, but the majority won't. But if they see something that cool on TV, they'll sit there and watch it. And that's what rally had in the early 2000s and the Group E days. It was just a mind-blowing spectacle, and I think it's got to be like that.
If I can just get your thoughts on, we've kind of had this ongoing debate at the moment with regards to the AP4 cars and the AP4 Plus cars in Australia, New Zealand, and now the R5 cars that have made the way over, albeit obviously the old MRF cars, for instance. But, you know, everybody worked really, really hard at trying to get AP4 and AP4 Plus cars going, and now an R5 car's coming in and kind of blowing everybody away. Do you think that's opened the floodgates? Do you think all of a sudden now we could actually see AP4 almost put to one side and people will just go out and buy a ready-made package?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, because if I'm going to go and buy a car, I'm going to go buy a car from the best car I can buy, you know, and when you know, especially from my point of view, you know the amount of testing and development that goes into, say, an R5 car. For an AP4 small team to try and develop that is almost impossible. So I don't know. To be honest, I don't know the cost difference between the cars, but unfortunately, an R5 car is going to be a better package just because of the development money that has been spent on it and the experience of these of M Sport or Skoda or whatever. Like, you can't even quantify the amount of time and money really that put into it in terms of buying a car that costs a few hundred thousand euros or whatever they are. You know, there's been tens of millions really in development money in terms of all the experience they've learnt from WRC cars and that just flows straight down into those cars. So it is going to be hard. And to equalise it, I don't know how you do that either. You know, I don't think you should ban R5 cars. I think R5 cars are probably a good level for national championship. It's just how do you make it cost effective and limit that. And if you want to choose to go the AP4 way, then great. But it is always going to be hard to beat a manufacturer team.
Absolutely. Chris, if I can just say to Rally Germany, which is this coming weekend, an event. What thoughts and what kind of experience can you take from when you did Rally Germany?
I was one of those rallies that I was always really good at, but I never got a good result there. It was my feeling. I definitely had podium speed there. I just always made just little mistakes. Fantastic rally to drive in terms of the risks you can take for the reward. It's almost a little bit like a, even though it doesn't seem like it, but a bit like a Finland in ways that, you know, you're looking just at that one corner. Can I take it flat? Can I get away with it that someone else won't take? And those sort of differences. And you see how close they are to the limit of when you're bouncing through those vineyards and you're compressing the car at 180k an hour and there's a wall on the edge and vines on the right and it's just over a car width. Like that's pretty cool. You are moving. Like the co-drivers are trying to spit out notes as fast as they can just to keep up. So for me, it is one of the more exciting rallies to drive. And because you have the different trains as well, you've got to be able to adapt day to day.
Where do you think the 2018 title is going to end up, Chris?
I think my feeling is Thierry can hold it together. He's just got to choose his moments more wisely than he probably has in the past and play that game and keep his speed. He's sort of doing what a lot of drivers can't do is driving at a sensible pace when he has to and picking it up when he has to and that's how you win a title. So I think Thierry can take this one.
Right, you heard it here first, folks. Chris, before I let you go, what's the rest of the year look like for you now? What are your commitments looking like? A couple more rally across events before the end of the season?
Yeah, it was short season this year with the new ARX. So we've got, it looks like the Nitro Circus World Games, which is a standalone event, which will be awesome, a bit like the old X Games event used to be. So I know Travis is working on some crazy ideas for that. That's in September, I think September 20 in Utah. So they'll have all the big ramp jumps for dirt bikes. They'll have lots of stuff going on. And then they'll have the rallycross there. And it's going to be a slightly different format to ARX and World FIA World RX. So hopefully we can get in a good position there. And then we've only got one event left, which is the second time we go to COTA, which is when the World Championship will be there as well. But I think ARX is heading the right direction, which is good for the sport in America. The organization is good, and I think as a package we're heading the right direction as well with the car. Really, our race pace last weekend in Canada, we've set some of the fastest laps in qualifying ahead of the VWs we're up against. We were just struggling a little bit for speed off the start, and then in rallycross, that's always a bit of a disadvantage because if you're not to that first corner first, you're in trouble. It's always hard to pass. So we know we've got a fast race car, and the team are working hard at fixing the issues we've got, so hopefully we can get back on the podium again soon.
Fantastic, Chris. Thanks so much for your time, because I know it's obviously it's early evening for you now. You can be doing family things rather than talking to some random pom about rallying and no, rallycross.
My pleasure.
So I do really, really appreciate your time. Can we come back and get you again soon, not too distant future?
Yeah, no problem at all, whenever you want.
Fantastic. Folks, that was Chris Atkinson, and we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport. Developed from hands-on knowledge that you only get in the service park, not the boardroom. The range of Kielder cordless impact wrenches are designed to be compact, lightweight, feel good, and crucially, get the job done. Kits are available for less than £160. Plus, exclusively for Absolute Rally listeners, use discount code RALLY for 10% off at www.kielder.co. Simply search Kielder Tools online.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. Hope you enjoyed what we did with Chris Atkinson there in the middle of the programme. And have you figured out what the rally car is yet? Of course, get your answers in studio at absoluterally.co.uk. We've got John Armstrong, who is not only, well, I've just put something on our Facebook page, actually. Not only is he quick in real life, he's quick virtually. John, welcome to Absolute Rally.
Hello. It's good to be back on again. I think it's been a few years since I've been on. So, yeah, it's nice to be back on the show.
It's been way too long, and we were going to get you on anyway, but Ryan Champion, who sat patiently at the side there while you and I reminisced for about 20 minutes, Ryan Champion mentioned something, I think, on social media the other day that you're working on something together. So we thought, well, as you and Ryan Champion are such good mates now, I thought, let Ryan Champion have a chat to you. I'm not allowed to speak to you anymore, John. Sorry, mate.
Yeah, makes sense, I suppose.
it's not true, Tony. You know, you're always allowed to speak to anybody.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah.
God bless.
Yes, John Armstrong, good to have you back on Absolute Rally. This weekend is Rally Germany. We've already talked a little bit about Rally Germany. Before we get into last year when you had a great performance on the rally, tell us a little bit about the event.
Yeah, Rally Germany's a really special event and quite unique because there's almost three different types of road there. You've got the vineyards, which is quite technical and abrasive, and there's a lot of junction changes. And then you've got the Panzerplatte military base, which is really wide, and it's almost a bit strange because you can go for miles without seeing any spectators, and and you've got the big Hinkelsteins at the side of the road, and then you've got like more traditional roads like we have back here in the UK, with sort of fields either side and fast and flowing. So yeah, it's quite unique in that respect, because you've got so many different characteristics to deal with and adapt to.
Now, last year you were doing Rally Germany in an R5 Fiesta, your first event in an R5, a drive which you won through a great performance in the 2016 Drive DMAT Trophy. What was it like to drive an R5 Fiesta in Germany?
It was amazing, but then I quickly adapted, so it was almost like I'd done it so many times before, just adapted so quickly, and it was a big step up from R2, because I had a really good run into the year before, 2016, in the DMAC Fiesta series. It was just a matter of trying to carry the pace that we had in R2s, and obviously it being my debut in an R5, we didn't really know what to expect, but done a lot of preparation on simulator, and we managed to raise the funds for the pre-event test, so that was good, probably helped me the most, and yeah, it was really encouraging to see the pace that we had.
Now, you put some footage on social media this week, and like you said, you adapted brilliantly to it. You really did grab the car by the scruff of the neck and get the maximum out of it. But your overall finish of 32nd really doesn't describe how well you were driving the car. I mean, by the end, you were managing to set fastest times in the category against the likes of Capecchi and new other regulars. So, you know, tell us a little bit about your rally and also, you know, your progression through the rally.
Yeah, well, I suppose we had a good test, and we didn't really know what our pace was like. We were testing with the M Sport guys on the Monday. Also, we had some unofficial times from the guys that we were sharing the road with, but we were still, after doing maybe 100 kilometres on the piece of road, we were still a couple of seconds off their pace. So we didn't really know what to expect for the rally. Then we had Shakedown, which went pretty well. I think we were faster than some of the quicker guys, like I can't even think now, but I mean we were sort of punching a bit in Shakedown, so yeah, just didn't really think anything of it. We were feeling confident in the car, and so then the first stage on Thursday was the town stage, which was ridiculously tight. I think you remember Chris Meek unfortunately had a mistake in there and clipped one of the concrete barriers and ended his rally. So yeah, it was really tricky trying to get through that stage without having any mistakes, and I was struggling because it was all basically hairpins, and I was struggling with controlling the clutch and spinning the car up whenever I was doing handbrake turns around them. So I was getting constantly bogged down coming out of these tight corners. So we didn't really have the best of times there. And then Friday morning, which was into sort of the vineyard stages, we struggled again with the control of the clutch and trying to get the right bite out of the hairpins and not let the car bog down. So I think we're losing quite a lot of time there. But I think the third stage in the first loop, we were sort of like 10 to 15 seconds off the fastest R5 car. So it really wasn't much considering it was our first morning in the car. And then in the afternoon loop, we made some changes to the car. Got a setup from someone in Ireland that was quite a bit different than what the base setup was that we made in the pre-event test, and it immediately felt a lot better in the tight and technical stuff. Car felt more nimble and felt like it was allowing the rear wheels to create more slip as well on the hairpins, so it felt a lot better. And then, unfortunately, we had a bit of a technical issue with the brakes then, or mechanical, should I say, with the brakes on the next stage, and unfortunately finished our day there. So that's basically where our hope for a good result ended. So yeah, then it was just a matter of trying to pick up the pace and make the most of the opportunity we had. And on Saturday and then on Sunday, we just constantly kept upping the pace and getting closer and closer to the front of the top guys. And yeah, Sunday morning, first stage, we were third fastest, and only like 3 seconds off fastest. So I thought, yeah, I'll go for that one on the next loop. But the stage after, we ended up in a field, so you would have thought that would have put me in place. But yeah, we just went for it anyway on the stage after, and thankfully we got the stage win, which was totally more than I could have ever expected, because you know, you're racing guys that have been in WRC seats before and have had to take a step back to R5 again. So you know, they're very capable drivers, and pace is mental, but it's not, for me, it's something that I can get onto, and I can drive at that pace. It's just all about seat time.
And like you say, some of the drivers that you were competing against last year, that Eric Camilli, Jan Kopecky, Timo Sonnen in there as well. And obviously we know just what those drivers are capable of. You're putting another great performance in Spain again in the R5 car, but it didn't quite work out for you budget-wise. And that's really led to what you're doing this weekend in Germany and a move to the EWRC. So tell us a little bit about the EWRC.
Yeah, I mean, it was something I seen last year in December. The esports final for the WRC was on, and yeah, I'd watched it as a live stream and sort of thought to myself, maybe that's something I could do next year if I don't get any budget for real life rally. Maybe I'll do that just my spare time at the weekends. So I started that practicing in December, and found that I was setting world records after maybe like a week of practice. So I thought, yeah, I'll give it a go. And then the opportunity came up to join Thrustmaster as their part of their esports team. And they manufacture all the steering wheels, pedals, the hardware for sim racing. So it was really, really nice to get involved with them and get some of their best products off them, which obviously helps be quicker. But yeah, the esports WRC takes place over all the same events that the real drivers compete on in real life. So you've got like 12 or 13 rounds, and then you get like 5 attempts to do. It's only 2 or 3 stages, so the times are really close by the time you have 5 attempts, and that sort of short amount of mileage. So yeah, it's really, really tough. You kind of have to know every apex, every braking zone, the sort of entry speed you need to carry everywhere. It's just basically a case of memorizing every stage as much as you can. So yeah, it's really tough in that respect. And the top 8 drivers in the point stands at the end of the year go to the grand final, and it's at Rally Germany this year, so that's where I'm going this weekend.
And what will the grand final involve? Will it still be what you've been doing through the year, just kind of in front of a live audience, or how does it work?
Yeah, there's 3 phases to it. There's in the first phase you do 3 stages, and then the 2 slowest times get eliminated, so there'll be 2 drivers eliminated. Round 2 is the same thing again, 3 stages, and the 2 slowest drivers get eliminated, and then there's like the sort of grand finale, which is the 4 remaining drivers compete over 3 more stages, and then the quickest time will be the champion. So yeah, it's going to be a tough challenge, because rounds 1 and 2, we don't know what stages they're going to be yet. So they may be ones that we haven't really practiced much. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, because someone's going to have had experience over that stage more than others. So, but thankfully, we've got a bit of practice time on the morning of the event to sort of get up to speed on them ones. But yeah, we know the three stages for the actual grand final part, which are a 23k stage in Poland, then a 7k stage in Corsica, and then El Chocolat. I think it's like 19 or 20k. So it's going to be really interesting, and that's without personalized setups as well. So it's quite tricky with the default setup. PRs move around quite a lot and don't really soak up the bumps as well as a tuned setup. So it's going to be really about luck and trying to have a consistent, clean run. So hopefully that plays into my advantage from real life experience, being able to manage that pace with caution where it's needed.
John, you've just brought me to something. Before we let you go, right, I've got to ask you this question. Okay, in order of preference, probably you and Ryan Champion, and then there's me about 14 rungs behind you. But we've all drove rally cars at certain levels, and we've all got frustrated, or rather, probably Ryan and I have got frustrated when we've jumped onto games. How real, you've made the transition across into this esports thing. Realistically, how do you think some of your competitors, your rivals in esports, could realistically make that transfer across the other way?
Well, I think you've seen that with Gran Turismo. They've had schemes before where they've searched for rare gamers that they give the opportunity to race in real life, whoever the winner is. And I can't remember his name, but there's a couple of guys that are still racing today that won the competition maybe 6 years ago. So I think it shows that people who drive simulation games can make the switch to real life racing. But yeah, it's obviously it's a lot different than your approach, and obviously there's more danger in real life, and there's no restart button as such. So it's just a different ball game, but you still have that competitiveness in esports that you get from real life. And yeah, I guess that's what sort of is the driving part behind it.
Good man. Listen, John, it's been ages since we've had you on. I'm sorry, we're all gonna cut yeah. But what I want to do, right? This is the carrot, right? You need to go away, become the esports world champion, get you back, and we'll do a whole program with you. How's that sound?
Yeah, that sounds really good. It's good motivation, isn't it?
go and win the championship, right? You'll come back. You can be our guest host. There you go. We'll get rid of Ryan Champion.
Sweet.
Yeah. Listen, thanks, John Armstrong.
Good stuff.
And we'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks very much.
Folks, that has been Absolute Rally for this week. We'll be back same time, same place in your little podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally. Powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.